for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Yesterday, Planned Parenthood President Cecile Richards testified before Congress. The issue for Republican lawmakers is federal funding of that organization and whether Planned Parenthood is profiting from fetal tissue sales, a charge Richards calls categorically untrue. Here to look at Planned Parenthood and fetal tissue research, Julie Robner of Kaiser Health News, David Prentiss of the Charlotte Lozier Institute, joining us from the CBC studios in Vancouver, Dr. Akhilesh Pandey of Johns Hopkins, and joining us by phone from Cleveland, Ohio, Dr. Insoo Hyun of Case Western Reserve University. Throughout the hour, I'm sure many of you will have questions, comments. Join us on 800-433-8850. Send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. You can follow us on Twitter or join us on Facebook. And welcome to all of you.
Nice to be
here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you all with us. Julie Robner, I gather you were at the hearing yesterday.
I watched it.
You watched it. And give us a sense of Cecile Richards, how she presented herself in behalf of Planned Parenthood.
Well, obviously, this was a hearing that was, you know, intended to allow opponents to score points. And in fact, she was interrupted more than she was allowed to answer questions that were posed. But I think she knew what she was walking into.
All right. We've got a short clip of her testimony. This is Cecile Richards. She is the president of Planned Parenthood.
To set the record straight, I want to be clear on four matters. First, using fetal tissue in life-saving medical research is legal according to the 1993 law passed by the Senate 93-4 and based on recommendations from a blue ribbon panel that was created under the Reagan administration. Second, currently less than 1% of Planned Parenthood health centers are actually facilitating the donation of tissue for fetal tissue research. Third, in those health centers, donating fetal tissue is something that many of our patients want to do and regularly request. And finally, Planned Parenthood policies not only comply with, but indeed go beyond the requirements of the law.
And once again, that was the voice of Cecile Richards testifying yesterday before Congress. She is the president of Planned Parenthood. Julie, give us a little political history. Cecile mentioned 1993, 93-4. So was there bipartisan consensus on fetal tissue?
There was, and it was actually a debate that began lingered through most of the 1980s. It really sort of hit the front pages in 1988 when a number of researchers asked the National Institutes of Health to work with fetal tissue. There had been this moratorium, complications. The Reagan administration put another moratorium on. This lingered throughout the entire Bush administration. There were committees that said, yes, this is ethical. Here are the conditions under which we should do it. Congress, as Cecile pointed out, voted in 1993. But, of course, Bill Clinton, when he came to office, had already basically eliminated the moratorium allowing fetal tissue when he took office in January of 1993. The key votes were actually in 1992 when this hadn't happened yet, when the Senate voted, both Senate and the House voted overwhelmingly to allow fetal tissue research. George H.W. Bush vetoed the bill, and the Senate actually overrode the veto. The House failed by 10 votes. But there was enormous bipartisan support for this, including strong conservatives like Strom Thurmond, who helped lead the charge. Mitch McConnell, now the majority leader, voted for this at the time. So it was something that was considered relatively settled.
Dr. David Prentiss of the Charlotte Lozier Institute, what's the current situation about, and how do you connect the fetal tissue issue with abortion.
Right. So historically, that statute is still in place that was put in back in 1993. There is continued NIH funding. Now, it's not very much. And in fact, there aren't very many projects currently going on. The current fiscal year, there are about $76 million NIH dollars going into federally funded fetal tissue research. The science has advanced greatly, but frankly not, from our view, in terms of the fetal tissue aspects. There was some large clinical trials done in the late 90s, early 2000s. The results were appalling, according even to some of the scientists, that the patients were made worse, for example, in terms of Parkinson's disease. Very few patients improved. The use of fetal tissue for vaccines has changed from the early years back in the 50s and 60s. It was used to grow poliovirus for vaccine. It is not used for the current polio vaccine, and most vaccines, those that do use fetal cell lines that were originated back in the 1970s primarily and even the 60s. And in terms of the basic research, there are much better models now. Induced pluripotent stem cells, umbilical cord blood stem cells, bone marrow stem cells, lots of other opportunities. And so the connection, obviously, to abortion is that's the source of the tissue. The consent forms, I think there are some problems with that, and we may get into that discussion. But I think the science has advanced until it's really outdated at this point to be using fresh fetal tissue.
All right. Let's go now to a researcher, Dr. Insoo Hyun, and he is a bioethicist and director of the Case Western Reserve Stem Cell Ethics Center. I gather this research has been going on for quite some time, particularly, Dr. Hyun, with vaccine development. Tell us about that.
Yes, that's true. So traditionally, there has been a lot of fetal tissue used for the development of vaccines. But now the transition is toward making stem cell-derived cells for transplant and for treating patients. And so, as the previous speaker just mentioned, there is a new platform called induced pluripotent stem cells where you will take a normal cell from a healthy individual and you can transform that in the laboratory into an embryonic-like stem cell, which then you can turn into any other cell type you want. There is, I think, still some very fertile ground and some excitement around using fetal tissue to help inform iPS cell research and induced pluripotent stem cell research. Let me give you an example. So in the past, researchers have used fetal tissues, mainly dopaminergic neurons from aborted fetuses, to transplant into Parkinson's disease patients' brains to see if there could be a positive clinical impact. The trouble with doing that, however, is that the cells will come from many different sources. You have to cobble together several samples to transplant into one adult. So the problem with that is they are genetically distinct. They may have slightly different developmental time points. And so these differences may help explain why those trials were not as successful as researchers had hoped. Here's where induced pluripotent stem cells comes in and a connection to fetal cell research, and that is researchers are very excited about the prospect of making those types of neurons that you got from aborted fetuses in the lab by creating them from other samples, other cell samples. But to make that type of stem cell product, you have to compare to the original. You have to compare to the fetal dopaminergic neurons. So there is a great need to have fetal cells as a control to eventually transition over into what the previous speaker talked about, this other exciting area of lab-generated cells that you would then transplant.
I'd like to now bring in Dr. Akhilesh Pandey. He's a molecular biologist and professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. Dr. Pandey, tell us briefly about your research and why you believe fetal tissue is so important to it.
Yes, I think we in the biomedical research field have all learned tremendously from experiments thus far with fetal tissues. And I think that fetal cells have important lessons to provide us that we cannot learn from other cells. Some of the issues that are often not addressed in the context of what we have learned from fetal cells are what I will touch upon. And, for example, in the development of cancers, it is not widely known that cells start to behave somewhat like cells early in development. And our lab studies proteins that are made by cancer cells and fetal cells, but not adult cells. And doctors use some of these proteins that are made by these cancer cells, otherwise not found in adults, for early detection of cancer. And these proteins can also be used to monitor when the cancer recurs. We are also involved in understanding of the human genome. And as you might know, all of the cells in our bodies have the same DNA and the same genes. But only some of these genes are used to make the real building blocks of cells, which I refer to as proteins.
All right, we'll have to stop you there, take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk further and hope to understand more clearly what fetal tissue research is all about.
Decius Daily.
Decius Daily.
Decius Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
Decius Daily.
Sign up at decius.com/newsletter.
decius.com/newsletter.
And welcome back. As we talk about the uses of fetal tissue and why it has become such a major issue in the debate over Planned Parenthood, here in the studio, Dr. David Prentice of the Charlotte Lozier Institute. And Dr. Prentice, would you explain what the Charlotte Lozier Institute actually does?
Glad to do. We're the education and research arm of the Susan B. Anthony List. We're essentially a think tank. We're focused on life-related issues, whether it's early life, consent, ethical questions related to the life issues. So.
And does the Charlotte Lozier Institute take a position on Planned Parenthood or abortion?
We do take a position on abortion. We are a pro-life institute, and so we believe in the sanctity of human life from conception to natural death.
Also, here in the studio is Julie Wavner of Kaiser Health News, author of Healthcare Policy and Politics A to Z. Julie Wavner, does Kaiser Health take a position on Planned Parenthood and or abortion?
No, we are an independent news service.
All right. I just want to make sure of that. Dr. Pandey, what about the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine? And you personally, do you take a position on abortion?
I feel science should not be a political issue. We are focusing on research, which is important, and on the science that has the potential to alleviate human suffering.
All right. And Dr. Hyun, what about you?
I'm a bioethicist in the School of Medicine, and my specialties are research ethics and the ethics and policy around stem cell research. I primarily focus on ethical issues in the procurement of biomaterials for scientific research.
All right. Julie, here is our first email from Pat here in Washington, who says, I'm still confused on what Planned Parenthood did wrong. If making fetal tissue available at cost is legal, maybe some members of Congress should change the law.
Well, there is, in fact, discussion of changing the law. What's at issue in the videos is whether Planned Parenthood, in sort of discussing some of the costs of these things, was seeking a profit rather than just covering their costs, although we do know that the videos were edited to take out pieces where Planned Parenthood representatives said, you know, we're not trying to make a profit on this. It's just a question of covering costs. And as the law was written back in 1993, there is payment allowable to recover the additional cost of procuring the tissue, but not to make a profit.
So what do hospitals do with fetal tissues and placental tissues? Do they sell? Do they throw away? What do they do?
They are subject to the same rules as Planned Parenthood. This is everyone who is procuring fetal tissue. Some hospitals do make it available to researchers. Again, I imagine recovering their cost. In some cases, it is disposed of and not used. And this is sort of the ongoing question is, you know, what is the status of this tissue, you know, post-abortion, in some cases post-miscarriage, post-stillbirth, whether or not it can be used ethically. This has been studied for quite a long time. One of the ethicists said to me, she said, you know, we do organ transplants from homicide victims. So you can separate the act of helping someone else from what even you consider an obviously abhorrent act that ended up in this product becoming available. So this is the continuing question that, you know, basically society's been wrestling with since I first read about this in college in the 1970s.
And Dr. Prentice, how do you separate these issues?
Well, I think there is a significant difference between, say, the murder victim or accident victim in terms of this is a prospective type of donation. The woman has come into the abortion clinic and seeks to get an abortion, and it's then, before the abortion occurs and before the individual's dead, that the consent is sought.
But after the decision has been made to have an abortion, there are strict rules so as to not encourage women to perhaps get pregnant and have an abortion in order to provide fetal tissue.
Right, but in terms of just donating the tissue even, we've obtained a copy of one of the consent forms that starts out that fetal tissue has been used to treat and cure HIV, AIDS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, diabetes, and cancer. Now, obviously, that's misleading at the least. And so you've got to learn
Alzheimer's and diabetes.
This is what the consent form said.
Or does it say perhaps to help find a cure?
No, it says it has been used to treat.
I'd like to see a copy of that.
We'd be glad to provide it.
If Becca Kaufman, the producer on this program, might be able to find such a consent form, I'm truly interested. Have you, Julie, ever seen that consent form?
I have not. I have seen some consent forms, but obviously they're all going to be somewhat different.
But wouldn't Planned Parenthood's consent form be absolutely consistent?
It might not be exactly the same because, remember, they're individual affiliates of Planned Parenthood. In fact, one thing that we haven't mentioned that Cecile Richards mentioned at the top, the vast majority of Planned Parenthood, even the ones that do abortion, not all Planned Parenthoods do abortions, not all Planned Parenthoods that do abortions have been arranging for fetal tissue. In fact, as far as we can tell, it's only happening in 3 or 4 states.
And what about the question of exactly, Dr. Pandey, what fetal tissue has helped to do? Have there been breakthroughs because of fetal tissue? Can you help us understand what those might be?
Yes, I'll give you 2 examples. One of them is quite a common condition where premature newborns are not able to breathe on their own and can die. And one major clue about how to prevent this came from studies in fetal cells where a substance called surfactant was found to be made in very little quantities early in development. So one of the therapies for this disorder is to give surfactant to premature babies to help them breathe and therefore survive.
Now, Dr. Prentice, do you think that is valuable?
The research in terms of the goal is valuable, but that same goal can be achieved with other cell types, and in fact has been.
Dr. Pandey, how might you have achieved the same goal with other cells?
So what I would say is this: we do not understand the intricacies of biology or development, and I think we are not in a position to say with absolute certainty what method will provide us the exact same insight that fetal tissues can. We are all trying, but until that happens, I think those tissues remain the gold standard, because we are trying to replicate some of those processes in trying to come up with clinical cures.
Now, Dr. Prentice, I understand you've said that fetal tissue research might have been the gold standard back in the 50s and 60s. Now you say we're long past that.
I really think we are, Diane. I think we've got, as we mentioned, the induced pluripotent stem cells, which Dr. Yamanaka won the Nobel Prize for just 3 years ago, umbilical cord blood stem cells, the solid part of the cord, various types of adult stem cells, which have already treated over 1.2 million people directly, not just in terms of basic research. There are many new models, and I think they have advanced, I would maintain, to the point that they can supplant the fetal tissue, and in many cases already have.
Dr. Pandey, how do you respond?
I feel the current state of science is saying that it is not true. We cannot be certain about this. And because of this, research both at the basic science levels and in the form of clinical trials should continue.
Dr. Hyun, I wonder, do you believe that fetal tissue will be replaced by stem cell tissue?
I hope it will be, but it's going to take some time to make that transition. You have to study both types to know how best to replace one type with the other. I can tell you that researchers have a very difficult time with the use of fetal tissue for research. I mean, nobody is very happy about that, but often that's the only source you can use to answer your research question.
Julie, let's remind people, explain the difference, if you can, for us, between fetal tissue and stem cell research, because they do raise political issues.
And they raise similar political issues. Basically, without going into too much of the science, fetal tissue is from aborted fetuses. Now, it can also be obtained from miscarriages and ectopic pregnancies, and that was considered back when this debate was going on. You know, perhaps there would be a tissue bank for that. Doctors were worried that, you know, frequently miscarriages don't occur in, you know, sterile hospital surroundings, and ectopic pregnancies are quite rare, unlike abortions, which are not all that rare, or they're not as rare as ectopic pregnancies. Stem cells, at least the procurement of stem cells that was authorized eventually by Congress, come from leftover embryos in vitro fertilization. And so that's similar ethical issue, but it's not an abortion, but it's, again, considered by some to be a potential life. It's an embryo. It's, you know, however many, you know, hundreds of cells. And that's been the main way to obtain embryonic stem cells. Now, of course, we're talking about, stem cells that are actually created in the lab, which would obviate the need for either one of these things. But as the doctors have been saying, being able to actually do that, science is not quite there yet.
Now, Dr. Prentice, how do you feel about the in vitro embryos and their use in research?
Well, we would still be opposed to destroying those young lives, even though they're much younger, but that would be part of our consistent ethic. As Julie's mentioned, though, these induced pluripotent stem cells, and Dr. Young, where you can take basically a skin cell and transform them into an embryonic-like stem cell, these cells, again, get around any sort of ethical problem because you don't have to worry about ending a life, no matter how young, and they can do virtually everything that these other types of stem cells can do, And then we still have the cord blood and the adult stem cells, which, as I mentioned, are already treating people for dozens of different conditions. So I think we've got a set of cells for treatment, for vaccine production, for basic scientific studies and modeling. And in fact, the induced pluripotent stem cells are probably a little better because you can take them from anyone, including a patient that has a disease, and study the disease right there in the dish.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Dr. Pandey, would you agree with Dr. Prentice that both methods are equally useful in finding disease, in using them for research, finding vaccines, curing diseases?
I would say most biomedical researchers would say that long-term consequences of the induced pluripotent stem cells, they are still unknown, and we need to continue to study them. So they have a lot of potential. And as far as the point about the basic science and modeling, I have this one anecdote to share in terms of what we have learned from basic science. There's an inherited genetic disorder called sickle cell anemia, where the therapy used today is to use a drug that turns on the production of a form of hemoglobin that is made very early in developing the fetus. And this is turned off in adults. So in this disease, the defective hemoglobin is made by adult cells, and it is being induced by a drug. The fetal form of that is being induced by a drug. And unless we understood the basic biology, I don't think we'd be benefiting from coming up with a cure to this type of a disease.
All right. And now let's move on, if I may, to the whole question of profit. And Dr. Hyun, tell us about the guidelines surrounding profiting from fetal tissue.
Yes, the prospect of profiting off the procurement is illegal. The guidelines for the procurement of fetal tissues for research by a research team explicitly state that there must be no payment beyond reimbursement for direct expenses and no other financial inducements to the woman to provide her aborted fetus for research purposes. So there's no financial incentive, both for the people at the clinic who procure and send to the researchers the aborted tissue, and there's no inducement or no financial incentive for the woman to undergo that as well.
And, Julie, is that where this video comes in? Please talk about that.
That's exactly where this video comes in. And the question is, you know, there are these sort of middlemen companies, and it's not clear to anybody how sort of they are allowed to exist. They can't really be for-profit entities under the law, but they facilitate getting the fetal tissue from the abortion clinic to the researchers. And of course, what happened in these videos is that the undercover group created a fake middleman organization and went to Planned Parenthood to try and facilitate getting the tissue, so saying that they would then get it to researchers, when in fact it was simply a way to get Planned Parenthood officials to talk about, you know, what they do and how they do this.
And was there a request for payment?
There were discussions of potential costs, and as I mentioned, in the short videos, the edited videos that came out, they cut out. We know, because we've seen some of the longer ones, we do know that many of the Planned Parenthood officials all said, you know, we're not allowed to make profit on this. We're not doing this for profit. We just need to recover our costs. But there were different amounts that were thrown around in the videos.
So have you seen all those videos?
Well, no one has seen all of them, because there's actually a stay in a lawsuit in California from the National Abortion Federation, because, among other things, they infiltrated a National Abortion Federation meeting. Nobody has seen the entire thing, but there have been longer versions of just the ones that were sent out.
I'm sure that Congress has.
No, they haven't. That was the discussion yesterday.
All right. Julie Ravner of Kaiser Health News. Short break here. We'll be right back. And welcome back. I have two consent forms from Planned Parenthood in front of me, one which was put up by Planned Parenthood that U.S. News put up on the website. It is titled Proprietary Property of Planned Parenthood. The other from Planned Parenthood, Marmonte, California, and it was put up by the Center for Medical Progress. Tell me about that center, Julie.
The Center for Medical Progress is the group that did these undercover videos.
Okay.
In so doing, they created a fake entity. There's some question about whether that was illegal under California law, and misrepresented who they were in order to do these undercover videos.
Okay. And in both, first sentence reads, research using, and this is from U.S. News, research using the blood from pregnant women and tissue that has been aborted has been used to treat and find a cure for such diseases as diabetes, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, cancer, and AIDS. The one released by the Center for Medical Progress reads, research using the blood from pregnant women and tissue that has been aborted has been used to treat and find a cure for such diseases as diabetes, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, cancer, and AIDS. Julie Robner, is any of that inaccurate?
It may be a bit of a stretch. Certainly, it's all being used in research that's aimed at those diseases. I'm not completely up to date on exactly where that research is.
All right. And second sentence reads, you can donate your blood and or pregnancy tissue after an abortion. Before you give your consent, read each of the following statements. We will be happy to answer any questions you have. They are both identical. And Dr. Pandey, do you find anything that is erroneous in those statements? Is the tissue that has been aborted used to treat and find a cure for diabetes, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, cancer, or AIDS?
That is not my area of expertise, but I agree with Julie in that there is ongoing and intense research activity into all of those areas.
And Dr. Hyun, what do you say about that?
Well, informed consent forms like that have to be reviewed by an ethics board. We call them an IRB. If I were to see that form, I would ask for a revision and to soften the language in the first paragraph. I think there are some problems with that form.
How would you soften it?
To say that it's aimed at research attempting to address those issues.
And Dr. Pandey, what's your view?
Yes, I think I would agree.
And Dr. Prentice?
It definitely would be misleading for a woman in a vulnerable situation, so those statements should not have been made as is.
And Julie?
I don't take a position on it, but I bow to the expertise elsewhere.
All right. We have a number of callers. Let's go to the phones. First to Andrew in Fort Wayne, Indiana. You're on the air.
Hi, Diane. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
I was wondering if I may just pose a comment, a question. First off, with my comment, I think, a lot of times we're looking at the political this issue of fetal tissue and abortion as a political issue, and really it's an ethical issue. There are political ramifications that come from it, from whatever side you choose, whether you're pro-choice, pro-life, pro-fetal tissue, against fetal tissue. But in the end, it's an ethical choice, it's an ethical thing. So, you know, we have to ask ourselves, I believe, whether or not what we're doing, is it unethical, and is that okay to do something that's unethical to bring about a greater good? So the question I pose as well, and this is just from me being not having that much knowledge with this, and I would love to hear what your panel has to say, is are there other ways to procure fetal tissue for scientific research besides abortion? Because I think that I ask that because, you know, maybe it's not whether or not experimenting on fetal tissue is okay, but how we procure the fetal tissue.
All right. Dr. Pandey, do you want to comment on other ways to obtain fetal tissue?
I think there's new research that is being initiated in fetal DNA and fetal cells in the circulation of the mother's blood. I can think right off the cuff that as one example.
Would you be more comfortable going about your research in that way?
I would say that is a very, very limited setting. It is being used to overcome some of the hurdles, but the large majority of the basic science research that we are doing, I think we still do not have an alternative to using the cells or the tissue as the material from fetus.
And Dr. Hyun, how comfortable do you believe researchers can be or are using fetal tissue?
Well, you have to understand that last year the NIH provided $76 million in fetal cell research to researchers around the country. Now, they wouldn't do that unless these proposals had strong scientific merit and there was no other way to answer the research question that they wanted to pursue. Secondly, all these proposals had to go through strict institutional ethics review. So if they can pass both standards, the scientific bar and the ethical bar, I think wherever you get the tissues, it's going to be justified.
All right. To Phyllis in Greenwich, Connecticut, you're on the air.
Yes, I work for the Alliance for Cancer Gene Therapy here in Greenwich and Stamford, Connecticut, and we work with many scientists who are looking for cell and gene therapy treatments. I'm wondering why all of the scientists, such as your guest from Johns Hopkins University, who are benefiting in their research from the use of this fetal tissue, are not speaking out to illuminate to the public at large that it is essential to their work. Thank you.
Dr. Pandey.
Well, I appreciate and admire the caller, and I think that is the purpose. We are passionate about science. We just worry about the science, and we want to point out that we have benefited from research as a community and that we should definitely allow this type of research to continue under federal guidelines and after all the ethical procedures are followed.
Julie.
This has been a question, where are the people using this tissue, the researchers, that's been asked ever since the first videos came out. When I was covering the original fetal tissue fight in the late 1980s and early 1990s, and then the stem cell fight that happened about 10 years later, basically the researchers and the disease groups, the Alzheimer's Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, were everywhere. They were blanketing Capitol Hill. You couldn't turn around without, bumping into one of them. And this time they've been remarkably silent.
Why?
Good question. I mean, it may be that the politics of this are now so polarized and so obviously more polarized that they just don't want to get into it. But that's been a big question mark for I know a lot of reporters who've been covering this.
All right. To Eli in Utica, New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Diane.
Hi.
So the critical issue here is that the many members of the Republican Party are prepared to shut down the government over the fact, which they believe, that Planned Parenthood is illegally selling fetal tissue for a profit. This is their stance. that Planned Parenthood, some are saying, are even pushing people to have abortions so that they can make money from the fetal tissue. But here are the facts which prove their claim false. First of all, of the approximately 900 Planned Parenthood clinics, only 1% are donating fetal tissue to research. So 99% aren't even attempting to make a cent. And of that 1% that are donating, half are charging zero. They're donating the tissue because they feel that it's a positive thing for medical research.
All right. Julie, is that 1% correct?
That's the 1% that Cecile Richards said. That's basically what we've been told. But it's interesting, a number of states have done their own investigations, including a couple of states where Planned Parenthood doesn't even do abortions. These are states where it's pretty clear that they're not involved in this at all, whether for-profit or not-for-profit or donating. And, you know, so then the headlines come, you know, this state has cleared Planned Parenthood of any wrongdoing. It's like, yeah, they don't do abortions there. But, so there have been, as the caller mentioned, as we've been told. I mean, I haven't been to every Planned Parenthood clinic and knocked on the door and asked, you know, are you doing this? But from what we can tell, it's really, you know, just a handful of states and not that many clinics, and a couple have stopped.
What kinds of laws exist around the country?
Well, there are a number of states that had previous restrictions or bans on fetal tissue research going all the way back to the first time this got debated, that had never been taken. Since this happened, though, there are a number of states that are looking at new bans on research. We went through this with stem cells also. And then you get the researchers versus the sort of the pro-life forces, in arguments. I covered a stem cell referendum in Missouri that basically would have shut down one of the major stem cell research institutes in the country. And in the end, that went down, but that was, I think, 2006.
Dr. Hyun, you wanted to make a comment.
I just wanted to weigh in a little bit on this idea that you can replace embryonic stem cell research with these new forms of stem cells that are created. I mean, that comment's been made several times by Dr. Prentice, and in fact, you know, the science simply isn't there yet. So the attempt to replace one with the other is simply not true at this point.
Dr. Prentice?
Well, I would disagree, and I think there are a number of publications that document that the iPS cell science is there now. And in fact, you've seen many labs switch, including Jamie Thompson's lab at University of Wisconsin-Madison. Jamie was the first to successfully grow human embryonics stem cells. In terms of your comment, though, I think there's still an open question whether it is only 1%. It's not just also a question, in fact, of the valuable consideration, but there's another part of statute that talks about not changing the method or the timing of the abortion, and there's some open questions, shall we say, when some of the Planned Parenthood doctors were talking about crushing above or below or a less crunchy method of abortion to get intact organs.
Now, isn't that the part that's in question, Julie?
There's definitely debate about, you know, what the doctors were talking about, the extent to which you can actually, you know, alter the procedure that you're doing that would lead to a violation of the law.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Dr. Hyun, I know you wanted to jump in again.
Well, I think that we have to be very clear that the guidelines state you have to separate the treatment decision of the woman to have an abortion from the decision to provide materials for research. What makes it tricky to propose that we only use materials from stillborn or miscarriages is that these are unexpected events. And it's very difficult in that highly emotional time to then ask the woman at the bedside, would you mind donating this material for research? I think it's better once the woman has scheduled her appointment and has made that decision to terminate her pregnancy, then when she's got more time to think about her involvement, to come in and ask for her informed consent for the research donation.
Dr. Pandey, question for you. Is there fetal tissue research going on to further understand both Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's disease?
Again, I'm not an expert on this, but I'm aware of clinical trials where scientists are evaluating these forms of therapies. And as scientists, we like to test them under controlled conditions because we don't know for sure whether it will work out or not, and we are driven by data. And for that reason, I believe that research into these methodologies that could transform our future should continue.
Truly.
Yeah, you know, there were a lot of complaints both after the fetal tissue research and after was legalized, and again after during the stem cell debate. You know, I think people were led to believe that the moment you made this research funding legal and available, that there would be cures, and science doesn't work that way. And I do think there was probably some overpromising, and it's been slow. These are the reasons that these are sort of the last remaining diseases that we can't treat is because they're very, very complicated. And, you know, there's a lot of work going on, but no, has there been that, you know, we're going to use stem cells to cure cancer? That hasn't happened yet.
Given all the testimony and Congress's look at what's going on with Planned Parenthood, what do you see as a possible result?
Well, you know, this is the 10th different attack on Planned Parenthood in the last 15 years. Last time there were undercover videos trying to suggest that Planned Parenthood was, you know, dealing with sex trafficking and various sort of that sort of thing. So this is, you know, doing the fetal tissue procurement, part of this is new, but trying to defund Planned Parenthood because Planned Parenthood does abortions and because there are people who don't believe in abortion and therefore they shouldn't get any federal money, even though there's no federal money for abortion, except in very limited cases. You know, that continues. So, I mean, if this one doesn't pan out, I'm sure they'll come up with some other way to try and defund Planned Parenthood.
Julia Robner, Dr. David Prentice, Dr. Akhilesh Pandey, and Dr. In Soo Hyun, I want to thank you all so much for being here and, pardon me, trying to help us understand the value or lack thereof of fetal tissue research. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkert, Denise Couture, Rebecca Kaufman, Lisa Dunn, Alexandra Botti, Susan Casey, Danielle Knight, and Allison Brody. Our web producer is Erica R. Hendry. The engineer is Timothy Olmsted. Visit drshow.org for audio archives, transcripts, and podcasts. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org.